So I've been really hammering the last couple of weeks. So tonight is going to be a night of more stories. I used to tell a lot of stories. A little hammering and a lot of stories. Okay. So the subject matter is as follows. In last week's Pasha, in Pasha's bow, so there was a makkah, and the makkah was called Choshech. During the makkah of Choshech, there were 3 days that not only, the makkah of Choshech wasn't just the lack of light, but it was a Choshech like an ink. It was so heavy that the Mitzrayim could not get up. Says Rashi, why? Because during the makkah of Choshech, 4/5 of the Jewish nation died. And those 4/5 were buried during Choshech so that the Mitzrayim would not see that so many Jews died, and if they saw the Jews dying, they would say, what's the difference between us and the Jews? They're also dying. So Hashem made a Choshech, made a darkness that it was so dark that the Mitzrayim couldn't even get up, and the Jews, for those 3 days, buried 4/5 of the Jews that were in Mitzrayim. This week's Pasha, in Pasha's Beshalach, when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, it says in the third Pasuk, V'chamushim olu b'nei Yisrael, says Rashi, chamushim, either they were armed, or 1/5 of Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim. I always wondered, why doesn't this bother anybody? There was a Holocaust. There were 600 Jews that got out of Mitzrayim. If they were 1/5, that means that there were 3 million Jews in Mitzrayim. And that means that 2,400,000 Jews died during the Makkah of Choshech. 2,400,000 Jews died. Why are we so happy about Yetzias Mitzrayim? Only 1/5 of the Jews got out of Mitzrayim. It's a Rashi this week's Pasha, it's a Rashi in last week's Pasha. And nobody talks about it. There's not that much discussion about it. But if there were 3 million Jews in Mitzrayim, there were many cousins and friends and people that you knew that didn't leave with you, that didn't get out of Mitzrayim. So there's 2 questions. One, what happened? In other words, to the 2,400,000 Jews, Rashi says they were Rishayim. That's the Lashon he uses. They were wicked because they did not believe. How could Jews in Mitzrayim, after seeing Til Choshech, that means they saw 9 makos, how could the Jews in Mitzrayim see 9 makos and be Rishayim and not believe? I'm sure that everyone in this room would say that if I would have lived in Mitzrayim and saw Adam, Tzvadeya, Akinim, Orov, Dever, and all the miracles that God did, there's no way that I wouldn't have believed in Hashem. So it's very hard in our generation to understand, after seeing so many miracles, that these Jews did not believe that they were going to get out of Mitzrayim and end up getting the Torah and end up in Israel. It's hard to believe. And why didn't they believe? It's very, very sad. But there's a Chidah. Chidah is a very holy sefer. And the Chidah, in last week's Parsha by Choshech, brings down a Zohar. And it's very scary for us. And the Zohar says the following, when you read it word for word, what the Chidah says. Choshech hevi ala Mitzrayim, God brought darkness on the Mitzrayim, v'yomusu rishei Yisrael, and the wicked of Yisrael died. Shaloi hayu roitzim lotzeis, because they did not want to go out. V'lo yiru ha-Mitzrayim, Hashem did not want the Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, see the Jews die. V'chein. And also, kishiyavo ha-Mashiach, where Mashiach will come b'mheira, before Mashiach comes, or when Mashiach comes, there will be darkness for 15 days. V'yomusu rishe Yisrael. She'enim roitzim b'geula. And when Mashiach comes, the same thing will happen. There will be 15 days, not 3 days. And during those 15 days, there will be a darkness on the world, and the Jews will once again have to bury their brothers and sisters. And he brings it down from Isaiah, HaKadosh, and Pasha Shmos. Very scary and very hard to understand this Chidah. We all sing as little kids, we want Mashiach now. How could it be that Mashiach will come and we'll have the same thing that happened in Mitzrayim, that there'll be so many Jews that won't believe and they will die in this darkness. People that we know, relatives, will die in this darkness, and Klal Yisrael that's going to live by Mashiach is going to have to bury them during the Choshech. It's a very scary Chidah. It's a very scary Zohar. So I'm going to try to explain a couple of questions, all with one answer. It's not going to be such a long shiur tonight. The question continues in Parshas Bishalach. In Parshas Bishalach, the Jews are in the Midbar, and they're stuck. Behind them are the Mitzrayim, in front of them is the Yam Suf. Listen to the Jews again. Now you have to remember, 4/5 of the Jews died in Mitzrayim. So this is the fifth that's talking now that left Mitzrayim, that believed in Hashem. These are the ones that got out. Listen to this discussion. Vayiru mo'o, they became very scared. Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael al Hashem, and the b'nei Yisrael cried to God. Vayomru el Moshe, and they said to Moshe, Hamibli ein kvarim b'Mitzrayim? Are there not enough burial places, graves in Mitzrayim? Lokachtanu, you took us, lamos b'midbar, to die in the desert? Mazlis asisalanu, white. What is this that you did to us, Leitzianu Mitzrayim? Why did you take us out of Mitzrayim? Halizeh Adova Shadibanu Elecha. Didn't we tell you this, b'Mitzrayim and Mitzrayim? Didn't we tell you, Chadal Mimenu, now that es Mitzrayim, leave us alone and let us serve the Mitzrayim? Ki toiv lanu avad es Mitzrayim, you were saying about Midbar. It's better to work for the Mitzrayim, to be an Eved, than to die in the Midbar. How could the Jews, this 1/5 that got out of Mitzrayim, say this to Moshe Rabbeinu? And Moshe answers, and he says, stand here and you will see the Yeshua that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do. And he says, Hashem Yilochem Lochem, God will fight for you, Va'atem Tacherishon, and you will remain silent. The next pasuk is one of the hardest psukim to understand. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, and Hashem said to Moshe, Moshe began to daven, Hashem help us, we're stuck. Behind us is the army, in front of us is the Yam Suf. We're stuck between a hard place, you know, a rock and a hard place. The Mitzrayim and the water. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, stop davening. Don't daven. Now's not a time to daven. Ma titzak Eli, why are you crying to me? Why are you davening to me? Daven b'nei Yisrael v'yiso. Jump into the water. Now's not a time for prayer. That's what the Torah says. This is very hard to understand. We are trained and we are brought up. And we know from the Torah that when a Jew is in trouble, Hakol kol Yaakov. It's time to daven. So if the Jews are stuck between the Mitzrim and the Yam Suf, so what are the Jews supposed to do? Take out your Tehillims and daven. And Hashem says to them, now is not the time to daven. Why are you crying to me? Now is the time to jump in. What are you talking about? That's not the way we get things. We get things by davening. And Hashem's yelling at Moshe, what are you doing? Now is not the time to pray. Put your Tehillims back. Put your Siddurim back and jump into the Yam Suf. That's the opposite of what we're taught all the time. Fine. So at this point, you're saying to yourself, I can understand them a little bit. They're really stuck. You know, it's very good to have a moon and to believe, but then when you're stuck, you know, you're stuck. And at this point, they were panicking. I understand that. They didn't see Kriyas Yam Suf yet. They saw frogs. They saw blood. They saw boils and some lice and some animals. And hail, fire, and ice together. You know what? The scientists in school, they could tell you that it happened. It's nature, this, that, and the other thing. But now they saw Kriyas Yam Suf. So here they are. This is the 1/5 that believed. This is the 1/5 that believed. They come out of Kriyas Yam Suf. There were hundreds, maybe thousands of miracles that happened in the Yam Suf. They come out of Kriyas Yam Suf. They're saved. They turn around to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they say, how do we know that the Mitzrayim are dead? Maybe the water came back into the Yam Suf and they ran out the other side and they're still going to come after us. Come on. Come on, what are you talking about? Hashem just took the whole ocean and split it in half for you. He did all these miracles and you're standing on the other side and you're the 1/5 that believes in God. You're the one that walks around. I have emunah, right? And you say to Hashem, I don't believe you. I want to see their bodies. HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens. He took the abuse from us And he listened, and the Yamsuf threw out, spit out, all the Mitzrim, that the Jews could see the dead Mitzrim. It's so hard to understand. And I think that anyone in this room is thinking to themselves, there was something really wrong with these people. Because even on the lowest level, if I would go through Kriyas Yamsuf and all the mockers in Mitzrayim, I'm not asking Hashem, show me the body. Fine. Hashem said, fine, I'll show you the body. Okay. Same parsha. A little bit later, the Bnei Yisrael are doing it again. Chas v'shalom, I'm not trying to say Lashon Hara on the Bnei Yisrael. We have to understand what's going on here. They come to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they say the same thing again, and they say exactly, Vayom Alein Bnei Yisrael, Mi Yutei Musenu Biyad Hashem, Biyad Mitzrayim, B'Shivtein Alasim Abbasim B'Chleinu Lechem. You took us into this midbar. Moshe Rabbeinu, you know why Hashem took us out? To make us starve that we should die in the desert from hunger. Now, I can understand you're stuck between the Mitzrim, the Yamsuf. You're in trouble, you're in panic. But what's going on over here? They just want food. If God can split the Yamsuf and God can do Makos and all these miracles, again, they're screaming at Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem, look what you did. You took us out here to die. That's why you took us out here to starve. Hashem is patient. I'll send you the man, something that you can eat that tastes like anything that you want it to taste like. And I'm asking you one favor, not a favor. I'm telling you that I will give you the man every day. Every single day you will get the man. Do not leave over the man till tomorrow. And of course, these are the 1/5 I got out of Mitzrayim, the 1/5 that saw all the miracles. The basic emunah. I'm giving you man. You're going outside your house, and there's something falling from Shemayim, and you're eating it, and it tastes like anything you want, even chocolate. It doesn't... By the way, what bracha do they make on the man? That's right. Amoytzi lechem min haShemayim. No, it's not a joke. It's what's brought down. They asked the question. They said, Amoytzi lechem min haShemayim. So here you are. You came out. You got the man. It tastes like anything you want. You don't have to go to the bathroom. For 40 years, they didn't go to the bathroom because man was totally spiritual. So there was no solace, no bad stuff to take out of the man that you had to, that your body had to get rid of. So you didn't have to go to the bathroom. You see that this is mamish miracle bread, right? And Hashem's saying, listen, I did all these miracles, everything. Don't leave it over till tomorrow. Whatever you need, eat. Tomorrow morning, you get fresh man. What happens? Again, this is the 1/5 that had emunah. The next morning, they leave it over. And Moshe Rabbeinu gets very angry. They didn't listen. They left it till the next morning. There were worms. Moshe became very angry. At this point, he lost it. He said, I don't understand. He went through all this. He saw all this. And you're leaving over stuff till the morning. Hashem said, you're going to get new stuff tomorrow morning. Okay. Come Shabbos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, and that's why we have two challahs on the table. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that on Friday, I'm going to give you double. I'm going to give you double on Friday so that you don't go out on Shabbos. You're not Mechal Shabbos. You don't have to go out on Shabbos. You're going to get double. Come Friday morning, they get double. They get double. Don't go Shabbos morning to find it because you won't find anything. In fact, it's very important that this Friday, Bezrat Hashem, you take your challah and your bread, your old bread and your old challah, and your old matzah, whatever you have in the house, and you feed the birds. Because the Medrash says, this Friday, you're the biggest tzaddikim. It's not like a fairy tale. It's not the biggest tzaddikim did this. They went in the backyard, and they used to put b'shalach, pashat b'shalach, Erev Shabbos on Friday. They used to put some bread in there for the birds. Why? Just outside of what I'm speaking about tonight, just very interesting. Because what happened was like this. Moshe Rabbeinu got up, and he said, tomorrow there's not going to be any mon. Dasan v'aviram, his arch enemy, who always wanted to make fun of Moshe Rabbeinu, they took their mon on Friday, right? And Friday night, they took their mon, their extra mon that they got for Shabbos, and they put it out in the field. And it was nighttime. And they said, the next morning, they're going to tell all the Jews to come out. Look, there's mon in the field. Moshe doesn't know what he's talking about. So they put it out all over the field. The birds came before dawn, before the sun came up, and the birds came and they ate all the mon. So when Dasan v'Aviram came out in the morning and said, come out, everybody, you got to see Moshe doesn't know what he's talking about. There's mon in the field. Everybody ran out to see, and they looked like idiots because there was no mon because the birds ate all the mon. So therefore, it's brought down a minog, a Kaddish holy minog, that because the birds made a Kiddush Hashem by eating the mon, so that it didn't look bad when the nation came out to see the mon on Shabbos, we, all these generations later, have to reward them and show hakaras hatov, show appreciation, by putting out bread for the birds in memory of what the birds did with the mon. 3,000 years later, I got to go to Marine Park, Erev Shabbos in Brooklyn, and feed the seagulls. Why? Because a couple of birds in the desert, they're definitely no relative to these seagulls in New York. They lived in Sinai Desert in the Middle East, right? But I got to go give bread to these birds who have no idea anything that happened in Pasha B'Shalach. They're birds, right? I have to show Akar Satov. The birds don't know any difference. Why do I have to do it? And the answer is what I've been trying to hammer into my chaburas, every chabura. It's not for the birds. It's for you. You have to show Akar Satov. You're right, the birds probably don't know the difference. You have to show Akar Satov. And therefore, thousands of years later, because what did they do? It was the best meal they ever had. Whatever the bird thought it was, that's what it tasted like. Right? So it was the best meal they ever had. So why do I have to reward them? Because the bottom line is because of them, there was no Chil Hashem. There was a Kiddush Hashem. And therefore, because they caused the Kiddush Hashem, till Mashiach comes, every Friday, Pasha's B'Shalach, we got to go feed the birds. Anyway, it's my minig, since I'm a little boy, to always feed the birds Erev Shabbos. Not just on Pasha B'Shalach, because you're not allowed to throw bread out. Bread, if you throw bread out, it causes you to become poor. To be very careful, bread, as the Gemara talks about, if you step on a crumb, it can cause, you have to be very careful. So, my shalashudas in my shul, so at the end of shalashudas, they take the plastic, they wrap it up, and they throw it in the garbage. So I would go around during shalashudas, and I would take all the bread off the table, put it into a bag, and the next Friday I would give it to the birds. And the birds appreciated it very much. I made a deal with them. If you eat my bread, you got to leave my car alone. It's been working, Baruch Hashem. It's been working. For some reason, the ones in Eretz Yisrael, they never got a fax, an email. So when I'm standing by the kaisel, they don't always leave my talus alone. But my car, they leave alone. So why do I do it? Because you're not allowed to throw out bread. But you know what? First of all, the people in shul think that Nebuch Rabbi Wallerstein has no food at home. And he makes French toast. And he's collecting all the challahs, you know, to make French toast. So I have to explain to them why I'm doing it. And sometimes I go to a shul and I'm not in my shul. And they look at me like, you know, what's this guy doing? He's collecting all the challah? Whatever. I don't explain it. But I just told a parent a year ago, I remember this discussion, she said that her kid is very mean to other kids. It's his nature. I said, take him every Friday and feed the birds. Why? Because when you feed birds, right, first of all, it's a good feeling because they need you. And if you ever went to Marine Park, you feed the birds, it's amazing. They hover by it. You throw the bread, they take it out of the air. I took my grandchildren to see it. It's amazing. But when you feed a bird, the bird gives you nothing back. And when you show children the happiness and the way that you're feeding the birds, you feel good. I'm giving something that I was going to throw in the garbage that had absolutely no use, that wasn't going to help anybody. And look at these birds. They're starving, especially in the winter. They're really starving. And look, I'm giving and I'm not getting. And when a kid learns that from 2 years old, 3 years old, every Friday, I'm giving and I'm not getting. I'm giving and I'm not getting. I'm giving and I'm not getting. His nature changes. We have to learn how to give without getting. So it's a nice minig. It's a nice minute to, if you have bread, to give the birds seed. But on Pasha B'Shalach, you're supposed to feed the birds. And it's amazing how God is so strict about Hakaras HaTov, about showing appreciation. Last week's Pasha, there's a pasuk that says the dogs, right? L'yechratz kelev l'shono. L'cho Yisrael, l'yechratz kelev l'shono. If you ever have a dog chasing you, if you say that pasuk, it backs off. I wouldn't tell you to go out and try it at home exactly, but from what I hear, it works. And what does the pasuk say? The pasuk says that there was no Jew that a dog barked in Mitzrayim when Klai Yisrael left Mitzrayim. What exactly is that all about? I want you to hear this. This is amazing. The Medrash says that there were these huge black dogs that were at every gate in Mitzrayim. There were 12 gates in Mitzrayim. And everyone knew that you could not leave Mitzrayim, a slave could not leave Mitzrayim, because these dogs were through magic, and any person that would try to leave Mitzrayim, the dog would rip them to shreds, would rip them to pieces. So all the Jews were very scared of dogs. Altogether, dogs, and I'm not, Chas V'Sham, I'm sure there are people here that have dogs, but it's really not something that a Jew should have. Because a dog comes from the Sitra Achra, comes from the other side. It's not sneistic. There are many reasons. The Gemara says we're not really supposed to own dogs. And you see that in the Holocaust, One of the things that the Nazis used were dogs. Yimach Shemai, Hitler had a dog. All the big Nazis always had a dog by their side. On top of that, the Nazis in the concentration camps always had German shepherds. They were called German shepherds. They were dogs that never ripped apart Jewish people. Dogs and us are not. So in Mitzrayim, these dogs were magical. They had kishuf, they had magic, and they would rip apart any Jew. So the Jews were very scared of dogs. Now it's brought down that a dog can sense the angel of death. And if there's chas v'shalom, if someone dies and there's a dead body, the dog gets spooked. They start barking, they get very crazy. And they have dogs that when they're looking for a dead body, you know, they start getting spooked, they start getting crazy. They have some kind of sense that they could see the Malach HaMavos. It says on the night of Makas Bechoros that Hashem allowed the Malach HaMavos to travel through Mitzrayim and do whatever he had to do. So the nature of a regular dog during that time was to bark. And they still didn't bark. Why didn't they bark? Because had they barked, it would have spooked the Jews. You're getting ready to leave Mitzrayim, and you're all happy, and all of a sudden you hear a bunch of dogs barking. And you're like, oh my goodness, the magical dogs, they're going to rip us apart, they're going to get all scared. So the dogs didn't even bark according to their nature, because there were people dying all over the place, they still didn't bark. So therefore in last week's parasha, it says that if you have nevela, if you have unkosher meat, who should you give it to? Lekelev tashlich. Throw it to the dog. Not to any other animal, to the dog. What do we owe the dog? We owe the dog because they didn't bark when we left Mitzrayim. And if they would have barked, it would have spooked us. It would have made us scared. Therefore, forever and ever in the Torah. It's a Torah, not a skula. In the Torah, it says, if you have nevela, give it to your dog. A curse of tov, girls, to a dog who didn't bark. Forever, till Mashiach comes in the Torah. If you have a nevela, give it to the dog. Lahavdil, a million times to separate Hakaras HaTov to our parents. They're not a dog, they don't bark, and they're not a bird. Hakaras HaTov to our parents. How strict HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be after 120 years when we come up there, and he's going to say, you learned in my Torah that a dog for thousands of years, you have to give it nevela, and a bird you got to go feed on this week on Friday, and your parents you didn't take care of, and you didn't show respect. Hakaras HaTov, appreciation in Shemayim, is a very important point. And the Torah tells us even to a dog, you have to have Hakaras HaTov. Even to a pigeon, to a seagull, you have to have Hakaras HaTov. It's very, very important. Side subject. I said I wouldn't hammer a lot tonight. I have stories. Okay. So, it comes to the Mon, and the Jews do it again. And they complain. Now, I understand until this point, but after the Kriyas Yamsuf, this is unacceptable. It's unacceptable. How could they do this? And what happens? They go out, by them going out to look for the mon on Shabbos, it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu at this point got angry. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Ad ona, Vayom Hashem HaMoshe, Ad ona ma'antem lishmo mitzvot. It's enough. When are they going to start listening to my mitzvahs? So the question is, when they left over till the next morning, Hashem did not get angry. Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. When? They went out on Shabbos to see if they got anything. Hashem got angry. What's the difference? It's a very beautiful answer. And the answer is that God understood that if you don't have food for the next day, you're a human being. So there are people that save. There are people who have emuna, and whatever money they make, there was a famous Rebbe, and whatever money he made that every day, he gave away. At the end of the day, he had zero. And then the next day, he had zero. And then the next day, till he had zero. That's a very high level. So Hashem understood that even though I told you not to leave over, but there are people who save, and they were nervous. So Moshe Rabbeinu got angry, but Hashem didn't get angry. But what couldn't Hashem accept? But if I give you double, what are you going to look for? If you have enough, and I gave you more than you need, why are you still looking for more and more and more? That's an HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I don't forgive. That's when I get angry. That you don't have enough for the next morning and you save, so it's not the top will be talking, I understand, says Hashem. But you have enough for the next day and you go out to look for more, but Yiksaif Hashem, Hashem got angry. That's the difference in these two psukim. Okay. So, the question that I'm really asking here is, how is it possible that after all these miracles, Klal Yisrael did not believe? Interesting question, and I think that every kid that learns the Torah, and all of us feel that if we would have lived in that generation and gone through all this stuff, we would have believed. But I want to tell you something interesting. If that generation would see what we have in our generation and that we don't believe, they would be much more shocked. Why? Kriyas Yamsuf was a moment, a day. Mitzrayim, everything that we saw in Mitzrayim, was a month. The month had just started to fall. If they would see an airplane, the generation in the Chumash would see a metal thing that weighs thousands of tons flying through the air, which we all get on, we don't think about it. You get on the plane, you put on your seatbelt. It's a piece of metal flying through the sky with people sitting in it, eating and drinking, a bathroom, depending on the size of the plane, two floors, and we get on, big deal. We're used to it. If they would tell you that that's bigger than Kriyas Yamsuf, a plane flying with people in it, Kriyas Yamsuf, okay. But this is every day. How many planes fly? Thousands. Kriyas Yamsuf was one day, one moment. There would be an amazement. One of the miracles of Kriyas Yamsuf, it says, is that one shaven, even though there were walls between each shaven made out of ice, that they could talk to the one next to them. Now you tell me, if they had a Verizon plan going through the Yamsuf, they were trying to sell it to you, and you said, so how far does my phone travel? Oh, just right across the wall, that's it. Nobody would buy that phone across the wall. Big deal. I could talk right now, right? I'm on satellite. I can talk across the world. Satellite? Mother's satellite. It's a thing that flies above the earth. The moon? No, it's a satellite. We put it up, it's flying around, and it sends all kinds of messages all across the world. We are living in a world that has much bigger miracles than you'll find in the Torah. So when people come and they say to me, Rabbi Wallerstein, where are the miracles? Split the Yom Suf. Ten Makos, the Mon. Mon? The Mon tasted like anything you want it to taste like. What do we have today to eat? Anything you want. Anything you want. They were asking, anything you want it to taste like, you could find. You go for Shabbos, go to a bakery, look what's going on in that bakery. Chocolate rugelach, cinnamon rugelach, chocolate cockers cake, strawberry shortcake, whatever you want. We have mon all the time. You want a fruit? What kind of fruit? You want summer fruit in the winter? You got it. You know why? Because it's on that plane that's flying 30,000 feet that's coming from Chile. And we live in a world of much bigger miracles than are in the Torah. And they would say, and how could you not be sitting and davening and learning and waiting for Mashiach and being the frumest, most sneistika, most holy women in the world? I don't understand. So if their generation was watching our generation, they would have the same question. If I would live, okay, we Mitzrayim was a month, it was a year. Kriyas Yamsuf was great, great. But we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have internet. We didn't have planes. We have rockets that landed on the moon? You want a miracle? Could you imagine the Jews in the time in Rosh Hashanah, in the mission of Rosh Hashanah, where it talks about Kiddush HaChodesh, and you would have gone to the Beis HaMikdash and said, that moon that you're doing Kiddush HaChodesh, we just landed on it. Nes Nifla, miracle. They would say, if we lived in such a generation, how could you not see God? The only difference in the miracle is that God hid himself in nature, in technology. But that's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all the Das and the Bina and the Seichel that we have comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he's hidden. But we have much bigger miracles. The miracles in medicine. The miracles in medicine. You have a headache, you pop two white pills, and the headache is gone. Your heart has valves that are no good and veins that are no good. A doctor opens you up, takes veins from your legs, puts them in your heart, and you live another 40 years. Did they do that then? No. We take this all for granted. I always thought to myself, I would have been 2,000 years ago, I would have been an outcast. Because if you take off my glasses, I can't see 2 feet in front of me. And they didn't have glasses. So what happened when your vision went bad? There was no glasses. You couldn't see. We go. Optical. I'll pick this frame. and I'll take those glasses. I'm nearsighted and I'm farsighted. And now I don't like glasses anymore, so I'm going to get lenses. And I don't like the color. You want to hear a miracle? Imagine this. If you told them in after they came out of the house, hey, you got blue eyes? You want green ones? Put these lenses on. Usually people who have blue eyes, they don't get those. It's the brown eyes that go for the blue-eyed lenses. Want to change your eye? Yeah, no problem. You can't hear? We'll put a hearing aid in. Amazing. Somebody loses their legs, create a prosthetics where the person can walk in the street. You never know that he doesn't have legs. Miracles and miracles and miracles. After car! Nebuch, they're going with a camel. You go travel with a camel. You would have shown them out of Mitzrayim. Hey, you leaving Mitzrayim? I got a tour bus, get in, air conditioning, cold water bottles, got a little fridge in the middle. That's it, everyone pile on. Bathroom in the back. We'll be through the Sinai Desert in a day. And they had to travel by foot. And yes, Hashem made miracles that their feet didn't blister and that they were able. I remember when I was learning it, that if your clothing was dirty, you stuck it in the cloud and you took it back out, it was clean. That's one of the miracles that's listed of the miracles of the clouds. Big deal. I go to Avenue J, I give him my dirty suit, he puts it in the machine, he takes it out, and it's clean. Same miracle, except it's through technology. Technology that has nothing to do with Hashem. So our question on them is their question on us. We're living in a world that the technology is much bigger. Those were short miracles. We're living in a world that's continuous miracles. You take a camera, you show a picture of me here, and people can watch it in China. It's amazing. But the Satan was smart enough to hide it from our eyes, but they would have the same kasha on us. So I want to answer this kasha with a story. I haven't said the story here in a while. Some of you have heard it, some of you have not. But I think this answers all the questions. The famous case, this was brought to me, was told to me by one of my students, Rabbi Yehuda Stern, who speaks every once in a while, who went to law school. Baruch Hashem, he became a lawyer. Not Baruch Hashem, he became a lawyer. But Baruch Hashem, he became a lawyer and he became a Rebbe. So he followed his Rebbe and he's half a day in yeshiva, teaching ninth grade in Tab, and half a day in law school. He was brought up in my house, very close to this boy. Just interesting, he told me this week a story. My father's yard site is coming up this next week, Thursday. So he was over at my house. I was always, you know, minion, what I spoke about last week. And this week, he's a lawyer. He's a lawyer on when people get hurt, accident lawyer, injury lawyer. And he works for someone on Avenue J. Okay, it's not a big firm. He works for a lawyer on Avenue J. Anyway, to make a long story short, a case came to him. Somebody that he knew, a man that got hit by a car, was in the hospital. A huge case, a multi-million dollar case. The thing is that this man that got hit by the car, he's very American, very educated, and is going to go for a law firm that's in Park Avenue, that's very famous, that won a couple of $10 million, $10 billion, you know. He's not going to go for some guy who's a lawyer on Avenue J. But we have to try. So they had an appointment to go to the hospital to meet this man at 4 o'clock. That was this past, he told me the story Tuesday, this past Monday. 4 o'clock, so he told my student, Yehuda, Jeff Stern, told the guy that he's working for that we need to go to Landau's, we need to daven mincha. Before we go, we need to daven mincha. But we'll daven mincha, I think the hospital's in Manhattan. We'll daven mincha at 3 o'clock, and then we'll go, and Hashem will help us. But the lawyer that he works for, who was going with him, the boss, started to get busy, this and that, and the other thing, and it was like 3:20, and they hadn't left yet. So they get into the car, and the head lawyer, who Yehuda works for, said, listen, Yodavim mincha b'yechidus, if we're going to come late, the worst thing you can do is to these professional people, if you come late, they don't want to hire you. Because someone who comes late is not responsible. So we have to be there on time. So my student turned around to his boss. This is his boss. And then he's trying to get a multi-million dollar, you know, situation here. And he turns around to his boss and says, listen, let me be very clear. We're going to Landau's, and we're downing 3:30. I'm not missing minion. So his boss says to him, we're going to lose this case. He says, no, you don't understand. If we don't go to minion, there is no case. I'm not going with you. So this guy probably thought that my student is out of his mind. But they went to mincha 3:30. They finished a quarter to 4. They came a half an hour late to the hospital. Listen to this. He called me Monday. He was like going crazy. They come into the hospital. The man's sitting in his room. They walk in. They're half an hour late. The man looks at my student and he says, "You don't need to say anything. I thought about it, I've been thinking about it, and even though you're not a big firm, I know you're going to do your best, you're hired. Just give me out the paper and let me sign it." Didn't tell him what cases they won, didn't tell him what they're going to give him, didn't tell him anything. That's what he said to him. "Just take out the paper, I'm going to sign it, I'm going to trust you guys." So he called me up and he says, "I want you to tell over the story because I would have never done a mincha if it wasn't for your father. Emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you miss mincha, it's not going to help you in business." Which brings me to a very scary story. I'm all over the place tonight, but okay. Because I think it's a very important story about Parnassa. Let's just see where it is. Tzadik Zion. Okay, listen carefully. I haven't said this story here. Somebody complained last week that I say too much stuff over and over. I'm getting old. I don't remember what I said. Listen carefully. Very scary story, but it's important about Parnassa and about Emuna because we're talking about the man. We're talking about Emuna. And he says the following. He says, there was a man that lived in Turkey. And he had a mill where they used to grind flour. And he hired a Jew, and they would grind the flour, and they put the flour on a horse, and they would go sell it to Jewish people. And this other guy that was working for him was making a percentage, a commission. He was making good money. And then one day, this man died. Okay? This man who ground the flour needed a horse to pull the grinding wheel to grind the flour. And he had bought a female horse and a male horse, but they weren't strong enough. But the horse gave birth to another horse. And after a year or two, this horse became a big horse, but not normal. Became, as he says here, it became huge, huge, that it was as big as five horses, and its strength was as strong as five horses. And many Jews came to buy this horse. They tried to buy this horse. But lo moche, he wouldn't sell it. And many Arabs came to buy the horse, and he wouldn't sell it. He said, because this horse does all my work, it does five times the work of any other horse, I'm not selling it. I need it to grind the flour. The Ishmaelim, the Arabs, went to the Pacha. What do they call that in English? The Pasha. And they told him that there's a Jew that has a horse that is so huge, it's so unusual, that you should tell him that you want to buy it from him. Okay, so the Pacha came to him and said that I want to buy your horse. So he said, give me a few days, I want to think about it, and I'll let you know. Anyway, the Pacha said to him, no, tomorrow morning I want an answer. I want your horse. And I'm telling you right now that if you don't sell me your horse, the Jews are going to pay a big price for this. And the whole night this man was up, and his wife saw that all of a sudden at midnight he left the house, and she followed him. And she saw him go to the barn and whisper something in the horse's ear. And the next morning, the horse was dead. The Pach came, they went to the barn to sell it to him because they had no choice. They opened the door, the horse was laying there dead. And the Jewish man began to laugh and to smile after the Pach left. And he came home and he started to dance. And his wife said to him, are you crazy? The horse that Hashem gave us, a miracle horse, that has the power of five horses, died, and you're dancing? Do you know how much money we were going to get from the Pacha? Listen carefully, and it's very scary to what he says. He said to his wife, that man that helped me, his name was Revival. That he used to sell our flour to all the people was a ganaf. And I didn't know that. But what he was doing, we never measured the flour. We trusted him. Whatever he sold, he gave us the money. But he was taking flour on the side and not paying us for it. He said, when I was learning, I dozed off. And he came to me in a dream. And he said that the horse that I have is him. And that the money that I stole, that this man stole from us, he had to give us back. And there was no way, he was dead, there was no way for him to give us back. So the Beis Din and Shamayla said, we will put him in a horse, and that horse will work for free, because you don't pay a horse. And until that horse makes the money that he stole, he will live and be a horse. He said, and he had many more years to work off the money that he owed us. And he said, if he would have been working for us, for Jews, maybe I wouldn't have gotten so crazy, but I'm going to sell him to an Arab, and this man is in a horse, in a gilgal of a horse, is going to work for an Arab. So in the middle of the night, I went to the barn. I'll give you the sefer. It's a Havas Chaim. You can see it. And he brings it down in Parshas Nitzavim. I went to the barn, and I whispered in the horse's ear, Meichelach, Meichelach, Meichelach. All the other money that you didn't pay back by working as a horse, I am Meichel you. And he said, the reason that I'm happy is I realized Hashem was Mekabel, accepted the Mechila, and therefore there was no reason for this horse to live anymore. And that is why he died. You don't get away with anything. There's consequence. You steal, you will come back and somehow pay back that money. You don't want to come back as a horse, and you don't want to come back as anything else. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Emes, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Din. And if you steal from somebody, even if you're not alive, you have to come back here, and somehow, some way, you're going to have to pay that person back. And the only reason that a person would steal something is if he doesn't have emunah, if he doesn't believe. So I want to end with my lawyer story. And that's how I got to Yehuda Stern, because he told me this story. You're not allowed to use this story ever if you become a lawyer. So there was, I'm going to tell it to you very fast because it's very late. There was somebody accused, a great politician, a multimillionaire, a very powerful person in America. It's a true story. This is actually taught in law school in coaching your client class. That's what it's called, coaching your client. They tell you this story. So he was a multimillionaire, he was a politician, and he was accused of murdering a 17-year-old girl. And they came to court, and it's one of the biggest cases of the century. For he was one day going to run for president of the United States. He was going for it all. So this guy was very wealthy. He hired himself the best lawyer in the United States, $5 million up front. That's what you have to pay this lawyer. What is that called when you pay up front?
Retainer.
A retainer. I always thought a retainer is what you wear at night, but okay. A $5 million retainer before the case. But this lawyer never lost a case. Against him as the prosecuting lawyer was a little schnitzel, 23-year-old, assistant DA, just coming out of law school. No chance. But the way it works in the DA's office, it goes like lottery. And it came out to this kid, and he's got to now go and prosecute this politician against a $5 million lawyer. And the case begins, and the press is there, and they're like, there's no way that this kid has any chance. And the DA gets up, the assistant DA gets up, and he starts to prosecute, and the first person he calls up as a witness is a lady that was outside the room. She heard a girl screaming, and she saw this guy leave the room at 3 o'clock. And he's pounding away this assistant DA, and he's prosecuting. And now they come to the defense, and everyone's leaning in. The $5 million lawyer gets up, and he comes up to the bench, and he says to the lady, "Lady, what time was it that he walked out the door?" She says, "It was 3 o'clock. He says, "How do you know it was 3 o'clock? She said, "I looked at my watch." "And what kind of watch are you wearing?" She said, "A Timex." "And how do you know the Timex was on time?" "Maybe it was 3:02. "Maybe you're one of those ladies who puts the clock a little bit ahead, so you're on time. Maybe it was 3:04. Did you check the Timex watch? When was the last time the Timex watch battery was changed? When was the last time a watchmaker looked at the watch?" And now everyone's sitting in this courtroom. This is a $5 million lawyer. Instead of cross-examining the lady, he's cross-examining a Timex watch. And the press is wondering what's going on over here. And I'm not going to keep you. And this goes on for a week. The prosecutor's prosecuting. He's got all his witnesses. And this guy gets up to cross-examine, and he's making a chayzik, a joke of the whole case. And Nebuch, this poor politician, is sitting there, and he's thinking to himself, $5 million I spent on this guy? And he's burying me. Case is over. After 5 days, judge gets up, says, "Okay, prosecutor first, summation. Give us a summation of your case." And the prosecuting assistant DA, this little kid, now he feels great about himself because he won this case. He ripped this guy to pieces. This guy did nothing. In fact, the jury's sitting there, six men, six women, and they're saying, guilty. There's no question. There's no defense. He was definitely guilty. We're going to put him in the electric chair. He took away this poor girl's life. We're going to fry him like French fries. We're taking him down. But they can't say anything yet. So the assistant DA gets up. Summation, he gets up. Now he's got his new suit. And the press is writing, you know, the assistant DA, this might be, if he wins this case, he's going to become a big lawyer. And he gets up and he says to the people of the jury, I just want to tell you that you must find this person sitting in that seat guilty of murder, first degree, punishable by death. He took the life of a 17-year-old girl. She will never go to the prom. She will never have children. She will never be married. She will never have grandchildren. You know what a life is worth? A life is worth a life. Therefore, you must find this person guilty, first degree murder, punishable by the electric chair. Amazing. He sits down. Amazing. And now the judge says to the other lawyer, to the defense lawyer, the $5 million man, summation. And the lawyer gets up and he's got a big smile on his face. He says, so you all think I got stupid, huh? You all thought I was drunk. He says, the reason I didn't defend my client, because there's no reason to defend my client. You see, what you don't know is that a week ago, this girl that supposedly was murdered called me. She's in Mexico. She ran away from her parents. There was no murder. And for all your information, at exactly 3 o'clock, it is now 2 o'clock, at exactly 3 o'clock, she is going to be walking in through the door in the back of the courtroom. Therefore, I felt there was no reason for me to waste my time in this whole court. Because if there is no victim, there is no murderer. And the assistant DA sits down and he says, I can't believe it. And the judge says, I was gonna say guilty. The jury's sitting there, they feel so guilty now. They were gonna kill an innocent man. And it's 2 o'clock and they're all sitting there and the clock's ticking and it's 2:15 and it's 2:45 and it's a minute to 3 and everybody turns around and they're watching the door. They're supposed to turn around and watch the door. And they're watching the door and they're waiting for her to walk in. And it's 3:01, and it's 3:05, and it's 3:15, and it's 3:30, and they're sitting there, and they're schwitzing, and they're waiting, and where is she, and come on, and it's 3:45, and finally it's 4 o'clock, she still hasn't walked in through the door, and the judge turns to the lawyer and says, I don't know what kind of game you're playing, but if you don't do summation now, you're going to be found in contempt of court, and you're going to go to jail too. And the brilliant lawyer gets up, and his client is sitting there, he's schwitzing, what is this mishugana doing to me? He's crazy. Listen to a brilliant lawyer. And the lawyer gets up and he turns to the jury and he says, You all were coached. You know American law. You all know that in American law, to find somebody guilty, he must be 100% guilty by beyond a reasonable doubt. Is it not true that all you members of the jury, judge included, and everybody in this courtroom, for the last hour, you were all looking at the door waiting for her to walk in? That means you were not 100% sure that she was dead. And therefore, according to American law, there is a reasonable doubt or you would not have been looking at the door. I file for mistrial. I file for my client to be found not guilty. And the judge and the jury sit there and the press start hitting their keys. He's not worth $5 million. He's worth $25 million. Brilliant. He tricked them all, but he was right. If you looked at the door, that meant you had a doubt in your head that she could walk through. Then you can't find someone guilty. And the judge turns, and he says to the jury, that's the law. Well, the law is you have to go into your room and you have to find a verdict and come right back out. And he's sitting there and the client is clapping and the lawyer on the back and they're clapping each other and the press is going crazy. And they come back out after 1 minute, the jury. They get back into the box and the jury lady gets up and she says, we the jury find so-and-so guilty of murder, first degree, punishable by the electric chair. And the whole place is going nuts. And the judge turns to the jury and says, you can't. You can't. This is American law. You can't make a circus out of my courtroom. We were all looking at that door. That means we were not sure. And the jury person says, I'd like to sit down and I'd like to have this young girl get up. Because of her, we found him guilty. And the whole place hushes and this young girl gets up. And listen to what she says. She says, I went into the jury room, and you see, everybody in the room was looking at the door. I was looking at the accused. And the accused, for the whole hour, from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, never turned around to look at the door. And the only person in the world that knows that she's not coming through that door has to be the person that murdered her. And therefore, we found him guilty. Brilliant girl. Brilliant case. And the law professor that teaches this says, therefore, if you're ever going to pull one of those shenanigans, tell your client to look at the door. This is a true story. It's a very famous story in law school. What does this story have to do with us? I'm giving speeches here for a very long time. You all go to learn. You all go to speeches. And you have great lawyers that are telling you great cases and how great you are and your potential and what you can become your whole life. But if you don't believe it, but if you're the one sitting and not turning around and believing that you're going to come through that door, that you can make it happen, that you have the potential, you're guilty. You're guilty. Because no matter how good the lawyer is, the client, the person, has to believe and has to show that they believe. The Jews in Mitzrayim was a great case. There were 10 makas. There was a Kriyas Yamsuf. There was all these things, but they didn't. In Yiddish, there's a word for it. There's herring, to hear something, and there's da herring, to make it part of you, to make you feel it. The Jews saw all the miracles, but they didn't take it in. It wasn't about them. It's a miracle about the Jews. It's not about me. We all in this room have a Kriyas Yamsuf every day where we're stuck between two things, behind us and in front of us, and we can't move. But you got to jump into the water, says Hashem. You got to believe in me. You got to jump into the water. It's not enough, tefillah. Tefillah is the case. But if you don't look at the door, it means you don't believe what you're saying. Sure, Magen Avraham and all the things that you say. But if you don't believe it, then it's just words. And you are guilty. And therefore, I'm begging everyone in this room that we learn from this week's Parsha V'chamushim Olu that the Klal Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim. Only 1/5 of us made it. 2,400,000 Jews died. And the Chidah says that when Mashiach comes, it's going to happen again. It's going to be 15 days. You do the math. If it took 3 days for 4,600,000 Jews, how many Jews it'll take 15 days? It's a scary number. So it's our job to help our brethren, the girls that you know and the women that you know, to bring them close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because you know what? I don't care how great Mashiach is. If you got to go through in the darkness and bury other Jews, it's a holocaust. It's not Mashiach that we want. If during the darkness there are going to be Jews that are not religious, that did the wrong thing, that we didn't bring closer, is that the Mashiach that we want? Do we want to go for 15 days and bury our cousins and our relatives and our friends? So if you have to believe, and you have to have emunah, and you have to believe in your door, and when HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows you, and when you look at a plane flying in the sky, you have to say, that's bigger than Kriyas Yamsuf. That plane is up 36,000 feet in the air. That's amazing. I'm living in a world of Kriyas Yamsuf every second. I'm on my phone every second. So I know that there's miracles happening every second. X-rays, sonograms, hello, MRIs. They can go and look inside your, could they look inside a person's body in Mitzrayim? You walk in, you take a test, you're upset. An MRI, it's showing every cell in your brain. We can see every cell inside your body. They never had anything like that. And we go, we take an MRI, we're upset. Nifla, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you gave us the ability to see every cell in a person's brain. You got to look at the door, not just hear the story. Yeah. Hashem does miracles that I could see. I challenge anyone in this room tonight, anyone in this room, to go home and at the front door, close your eyes. And don't open your eyes till tomorrow morning. There's not a person in this room that can do it. You're going to open it up a little bit for a second to make sure that you can still see. Every morning you make a bracha, pokeach ivrim. Do we think when we make a bracha, blessed are you Hashem that I'm able to see? Yeah, okay, next. Malbish arumim, that I'm able to wear clothing, next. Nu, nice and leah of koyach, that I'm able to stand, next. It's a story, it's a lawyer. But if you don't turn around and you don't think to yourself, Hashem gives me the ability to see, so you want to appreciate it, I'm telling you what to do. You want to appreciate it? When you get to your house tonight till tomorrow morning, keep your eyes closed. You're not going to be able to do it. You're going to go out of your mind. Well, there are people who are blind, remember, for their whole lives. They never see anything. And if Hashem didn't give you vision, your whole life you would only see black, darkness. No colors, no people, nothing. Those are the miracles that every second and every day, and you hear it, and it's a good case. But you sit in your seat like that guy, and you don't turn around. Because you are the only person that knows that there's a HaKadosh Baruch Hu or doesn't know there's a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you sit there and you don't look at the door, then you don't really believe your own story. But if you turn around and you look at the door, then in the schutz of you looking at the door and believing in yourself and in believing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu and believing that Mashiach is coming. You know, the Chafetz Chaim had a little suitcase in his house. I wonder what was in that suitcase. I wonder what we would put in all. What would be the first thing you put in your suitcase for Mashiach? Your cell phone. I guarantee you the Chafetz Chaim didn't have a phone in that suitcase. But he believed Mashiach was coming. He had to have a suitcase. He had to be prepared. We need to prepare for Mashiach. Prepare for Mashiach. If Mashiach comes tomorrow, are you ready? Did you have a good day today? Did you stay off the internet? Did you not look at things you're not supposed to? Did you stay away from the wrong music? Did you have kibbutz of aim? Do you want to be judged tonight to see if you made Mashiach's team? No. So if you really say every morning, Ani Mamim, Vafel Pishis Mamei, even though it takes so long, 3 o'clock, the clock's turning to 4 o'clock. It's taking a long time for him to get here. Hashem says, just turn around for 1 second and believe it. Change your life for 1 second. Mashiach's coming. I got to change. For 1 second, show me that you believe it. Because if you don't show me you believe it, you're going to lose the case. You're not going to be there. Hashem should give us all emunah and atzlacha and bitachon. And we should tackle all turn around and we should see Mashiach walk through the door.